Hi, everybody. I'm Albert. I'm an addict.
Hey,
and I'm glad to be here. Like to say hello to all my home group people, the best little home group in town, the Better Way group. Hello. Thanks for being here. And everybody. Just like to say that I'm glad to be here, and I'd like to share the fourth step with you, and I'd like to announce in the beginning, I'm a speaker in the first place, person singular. I'm not going to talk about you, what you should do, or what we should do. It's not about that. It's about me. How you do it is self-realization, self-determination. That's what it's about. I sponsor a lot of people. Ask me, should they work the fourth step? And there's a moment of silence, and they say, what you saying? I didn't hear what you're saying. They ask me again, should I work the fourth step? There's still another moment of silence. I am not here to tell anybody what they should do. That doesn't qualify me as being a sponsor to tell people what they should do, other than share my experience, strength, and hope, and learn how to listen, learn how to shut up, and learn how to help people to work at their own solutions to whatever they need to do, be supportive of whatever they have to do. I like to start off by saying I always like to see the identification. Anybody here else? Here, an addict beside myself. Anybody here suffer from insanity like myself from time to time? I like to share that I was at a meeting speaking one time, and I was just saying I'm crazy, and a lady in the back of the room said, crazy, Albert, you've been around 10, this is a few years ago, you've been around 10, 11, 12 years, and you're still saying you're crazy? I don't understand that. And she, the adrenaline started flowing in her, I guess, and she got wound up. I just don't understand. And she jumped up down, why are you saying you're crazy? You motherfuckers, you just pissed me off saying you're crazy. You're not crazy. I hear you. I see you. I hear you. You're not crazy. And I was just thinking to myself, I am so glad that I know I'm crazy. And that's what that fourth step is about to me, knowing that I'm crazy, you know. And I don't have to, there's no stigma attached to that word with me. I know that I'm an addict. There's no stigma attached. It gives me an opportunity to come in here and not talk in the second or the third person and talk like I'm preaching or teaching. You know, there's no guru in this. And I, you know, it's just anybody in here, I guess, that thinks it's, that somebody can work that fourth step better than anybody else. It's a matter of just getting into myself and learning some things about myself and revealing it. I guess, let me start like this. For a long time, when I first came around, it's like I was born with my natural born truth as a youngster. You know, but as I was confronted with the outside, the externals in my life, my levels of honesty changed from my truth to protect myself to become a survivor, you know, to be able to deal with life head on. And after a while, it became a reality of life that I was a certain way, you know, and those mistruths and images and all that I did to protect the insides of me came out more and more, and it became a way of life, you know. But as I come into recovery, it's like an onion peeling a layer at a time. Uncover, recover, discover, uncover, recover, discover, uncover, recover, discover. And my levels of honesty begin to come back to reality, to my truth, to meet up with my truth. I was a caring, you know, compassionate, screaming little baby, I guess, when I was born. I don't know if I was born with the disease or I just cultivated the disease. I don't know. But the fact is, I know I did a lot of things that's characteristic of the disease. One of my greatest characteristics in the addiction for me is denial. Right today, I can be a classic case of denial. That's why I need people to help me to get in touch with what those things I need to do to get in touch with in my fourth step or in anything I need to do. I need people to talk about themselves and get in touch with things, you know, pull me up in order for me to get in touch with my reality sometimes. I don't know. I can be in denial. You know, I need people to talk about me. I need people to gossip about me. I need people to be judgmental. I need not be judgmental, but the most ways that I'm not judgmental is to realize that I am judgmental. The most ways that I not gossip is to realize that I do gossip. The most I'm as sane as I realize how insane I really am. I'm as dishonest as I realize, I'm as honest as I realize how dishonest I really can be, you know. So I have to, the realities have to come to me in order for me to understand or have any purpose to work on anything. You know, I used to be around and I'd do something malicious in the beginning and vindictive, and I'd say, well, the bottom line, I'm clean. Knowing that I did something to harm somebody else. But the bottom line, I'm clean. And I just want to talk a little bit about the bottom line as versus cleaning the cesspool and the clutter inside of my body. You know, I don't want my bottom line to go further and further down. Be laying up in the hospital with tubes running through me saying, well, the bottom line is, I ain't dead. Oh, I don't want to be in a fit of anger just beating somebody's ass. I'm beating his ass. Why are you beating me? The bottom line is, I'm clean. Or be on the receiving end of an ass whipping. Somebody beating my ass. I wouldn't say the bottom line at that point. If I'm on the receiving end, I'd say, man, you ain't working on nothing. See, it flip-flops, it changes. Depends on what position I'm in. So I don't want to be subjecting myself to that bottom line and have the years that I have or the days that I have or the minutes I have. I don't want to still be hopping on that bottom line. There's a lot of things inside of me internally. I'm crazy, really. I mean, I'm psychotic. I was out of touch with reality, and what I did to my body and what I did to my life, that's psychosis. I don't, you know, nobody else's interpretation but mine. I was out of touch with reality. That wasn't my natural born truth, what I did to myself. You know, and like I said, it became a way of life. You know, that I did it on and on and on. Some of the things that I found out in working that fourth step was revealing to me is that when I was a youngster, I was born, and I often talk about this because it talks about this in the literature too, how there's a similarity between the drug use and sexual gratification and sexual overtones or whatever, sexual problems. And when I was a youngster, I was in elementary school and I hated young girls that were crotch watchers. They watch your crotch to see how well you hung. And I grew up in a real sex culture, you know, where, and nowadays too, you see the rap stars as well as young kids go around holding their penises, you know. I grew up in that kind of a culture where my self-worth was based on, I thought, my sexual prowess, how big my penis was. I hated young girls that watch your crotch. They look at your fingers and hands and your feet. And I had little hands. And they make a determination how big your penis is, you know. So it was nothing for me to be standing in the mirror the night before I go to school with a big ball of wool down in my pants. I just wanted that bulge. All I ever wanted to hear somebody would say was, damn, you're toting. Nobody ever told me, damn, you're toting. But the fellowship is so accommodating. Before I leave this room and after I leave this room, one of y'all going to bless me and say, damn, Albert, you told me. I had a big thing about that. I mean, and listen to what I'm saying. Is the addiction is not about really, the addiction is about a lot about making comparisons. You know, the addiction is about not thinking that I'm as good as somebody else and not accepting my natural God-given self. The addiction won't allow me to come in this room a lot of times and just be my natural self without trying to get some attention, you know. And that's what the drugging and the drinking was about, trying to get some attention, pouting, shouting, kicking, screaming, throwing a temper tantrum. That's what it was about. As a little kid, because I wasn't verbalizing my feelings. So what did I do? It's just like a kid going in the candy store and the mother said, Johnny, you can't have that. What would the kid do? A little infant. Throw himself on the floor and shout and pout and throw a temper tantrum. And that's what I was doing. Because I couldn't verbalize how I felt. I couldn't go out on the corner and say, I feel weak today. They'd say, turn around and bend over. But I can come in here. I hope nobody in here would tell me to turn around and bend over. But I can come in here and say that I feel weak. And you know what the paradox is to that. I'm able to gain some strength by admitting that I'm crazy, that I'm weak, all these things. You know, there's no stigma attached to it. Once I really internalize the fact that I'm an addict, that nullifies all the rest of that stuff. The addiction is about denial. Man, that's one of the biggest characteristics, denial, control, and all that kind of stuff. And the recovery piece is about acceptance. You know, and I'm learning, slowly learning, and it's a continuum, an ING. Learning, processing, growing, all these things are continuum. You know, I'm learning how to love myself. I'm learning how to love myself. I'm learning acceptance. The moment I think that I've accepted something, God in its infinite wisdom will send something or somebody my way to let me know I'm not in as much as acceptance as I may think I am. It's an ongoing process, you know. I don't know, I was born in a family, my mother and father were, my father was 50, my mother was approaching 50, and I was the youngest of a good-sized family, and I always thought I was adopted. And seems like when I was growing up, nobody paid any attention to me. Everybody was in pursuits of their careers and doing whatever they needed to do, and I felt like a loner in my house. My brother, who was my role model, he was an artist, and as a youngster, he was going all around the world, even to the Russian frontier when they were highly communist, and he was getting presidential awards, and he was a musician, an artist, and he was doing a lot of stuff, you know, and he'd come home as a youngster, he'd come home and sit around, and everybody would praise him, and I'd say, man, I said to myself, what's going on, you know, I'm not getting any attention, and I was playing sports, you know. But later on, in a latter step, you know, I made some amends to him the way I had resentments. And he said, well, I felt that about you, too. You know, I felt like I wasn't getting any attention. So it's a matter of feelings. But I don't know. It's just that when I was so young and couldn't express myself, it seems like I would have done anything just to get some attention. You know, I wanted to be that all boy, you know, that all-American boy. And I went against the grain, but the pain of me going against the grain of my teaching wasn't as great as the pain of me feeling like I couldn't be accepted. You know, and I thought that the narcotics, when I indulged in the narcotics, was the greatest thing that I'd ever been confronted with. It took me somewhere else, you know. And I used to say for a long time, I just love narcotics. I love narcotics. I love narcotics. That sounded slick, but the way the real deal is, I hated myself. I hated myself. In the first few years, I would say that. Well, I love to get high. I love to get, to be honest with you, I love to get high. I love this. But really, I didn't love it. I hated myself to do what I did to myself continuously over and over and over. And, you know, it's just a thing that the fourth step brought along an opportunity for me not to lower that bottom step, that bottom line. You know, but to keep on working on myself. And a lot of times, it's not easy. I had to look at some of the resentments I have, the fear, the self-centered fear, you know, because the resentments would turn into anger. You know, and I don't know, and the anger, you know, the anger takes me, the anger will go in or come out. It didn't make a difference. I'd go into a shell or go out and be hostile. But I was an angry guy, you know, I was a real angry guy. You know, and the treatment program helped me. They first started getting me in touch with, I went to a long-term treatment program, and they got me in touch with working on myself and doing those steps, you know. And they had us to write a lot about the steps and write a lot about the way we felt about life. And I was taking methadone, coming off of meth when I was in treatment, and it took me about 25 or 30 days. And I was going to take my meth every day, drinking my meth. And there was a nurse there that had a real high-pitched voice. And she would say, after I drank my meth, she would say, Albert, how do you feel? I said, I feel fine. And drink my meth, you know. And she would go on every day as the days went past. Albert, how do you feel? I feel fine. So now she was getting ridiculous. And she was getting imposing on me, you know, because I was figuring this thing out. Well, just the nature of this thing. She's trying to get me to say I'm fucked up and I'm all this. I feel this and feel that. But I figured this program out. I don't feel like the rest of these guys in here. I do feel fine. But drinking my meth, I was feeling fine. You know? try to get you to work on some things, you know, but it wasn't like me, you know. All I needed to do was stop using, that bottom line. All I needed to do was clean up, stop using, you know, and at that time, get a package and go back out there and sell it, you know. But every day, I feel fine and drink my meth. And she seems like as the days went on, her voice got high, more high-pitched. Her voice got higher and higher. Abbott, how do you feel? I feel fine. But now she was adding to that. You're an angry young man. So it didn't make, still, she wouldn't get no feelings out of me. So about the 15th or the 16th or 17th day, she would come back. Abbott, how do you feel? I drink my meth. I feel fine. You're an angry young man. Every day. So I got to thinking when I went back to my room, why does she keep fucking with me like that? I know I'm not angry. I have some of those things that, you know, that cool people have, you know. Well, I'm a little dishonest, you know, and I'm not jealous, you know, nothing like that. I might be, you know, that's not me. I might be unforgiving sometime, you know, but I'm not all those other things, resentments, anger. I don't know what that she's talking about. I was too cool for that, you know. So I went back about my next to my last day, and she said, I went to get my meth, and she said, Abbott, how do you feel? I feel fine. Drank my meth, and then I went back to my room that night. I said, I don't know what this lady's about, because she's doing this in front of people, and she keeps telling me I'm an angry young man. I don't know why she's saying that, because I'm not angry. But at the same time, now I was working up some shit inside of me, you know. But I say, well, I'm gonna fix her. Let her know, definitely tomorrow when I drink my. This is about the next to the last day. I'm gonna let her know definitely tomorrow when I drink my meth that I am not angry. And I went to her, drank my meth, and she seemed like she was home practicing how she was going to ask me. Real high-pitched voice. Abbott, how do you feel? I said, I feel, and I was exaggerating that. I feel fine, drank my meth. She said, you are angry? Fuck you, bitch, kiss my ass, you motherfucker, you. And from that point on, I found out I had 500 character defects. I was angry. And what I'm saying is, like today, after 19, almost 20 years, I still can be a classic case of denial. I can be down in this convention. I just happen to feel fine today. But I mean, I have been down to these been to conventions and not feel fine, and I see people waiting afar, like 50 feet away, with a hug. God damn, I don't want to hug that person. Today I don't mind hugging, you know. Then I try to get take me half an hour to get 25 paces, you know. And I'd be saying, well, I feel fine, but the real deal, I really wasn't fine. And like I said, I can be a classic case of denial. What helps me come out of it a lot of times is not the perfect working person in the program, not the person that works that program, say, well, today I call my sponsor, today I ain't about that. Today, you know, I give gut level. Today I'm about honesty. But a lot of times people come in struggling, and I get that built-in barometer in my stomach. You know, that lets me know that, why in the fuck don't they shut up? But at the same time, it's letting me, why in the fuck don't you listen? You know, and at one time I couldn't listen, you know, but today, the humiliation that I face, I can listen to a person in Gallaudet talk to me. You know, I couldn't listen, but I need people in talking about whatever they're talking about to kick up feelings in me. I need to keep that focus on me and say, well, when the person I'm sponsoring calls me, said, well, yesterday I was out last night cruising and I did this and I did that. And I have to listen without awe, or I have to listen like he's talking to my addiction, and take the personality out of it and not be in awe of what they're saying, because whatever they're saying, when I say I'm an addict, I've either done it, I'm doing it, or I can do it in the future. You know, and one of the biggest things that I've learned how to do is not to give advice and, you know, tell people what they need to do. And because it wasn't that long that I was, you know, subjecting myself with needles this long, and the needles got longer and longer, and it seemed like they were coming from one side of my neck to the other. So I don't have the right to come in and tell people 19 or 20 years later that all of a sudden you need to do this, you need to do that. You know, that makes me superior to somebody. But the ability to just be able to listen, that's a milestone right there, the ability to just be able to listen. Not only to what somebody is saying to me, but to listen to myself, you know, and people get me in touch to what I need to talk about by talking about themselves. And I have to listen to some of the things. And that's how I got in touch with a lot of the things that, you know, those couple of examples that I got you, that I was sharing just now, I got in touch with those by listening to people talking about their stuff, you know. In addition to people talking about that, I need to keep coming back to meetings, I need to call my sponsor, and need to read the literature, you know. But the whole basis of working any of those steps, the steps are for me, not to kill myself. Traditions are for me and people like me, not to kill the group, you know. But just coming in and listening to some of these things that I need to talk about, need to get in touch with. And it's been a blessing. I'm a firm believer that people who need people are the luckiest people in the world, because I can deny that I'm in denial, I can deny that I deny, you know. And it's very important for me to listen and stay open, you know. Another thing that I've gotten is the ability to say, I don't know, you know. Now, a lot of those issues, I'm able to do that more and more, because there were some issues inside of me that did know certain things that didn't really know. But a part of that image would come out and try to figure out what you needed to do. You know, when you ask me, Albert, should I leave my wife? Well, in the beginning, I say, well, I try to figure out, yeah, what you should do, man, is maybe you should leave your wife and stay away a couple of months. And, you know, whatever the motive was for me to say that, I might have had his wife in mind for myself. But it's not important. The important thing is to help me as an addict. I needed help to be able to come to some kind of realization for myself. So what I do is just be a good listener. What do you think you should do, man? And really, the answer's inside of them. My answer was inside of me. I just needed to work for it. I wanted somebody to tell me what I needed to do. So if I did wrong, I could say, well, I try to live up to your expectation. But the bottom line is, it has more meaning when I work for it. You know, I don't know if you need to go back out. I have a guy who's an intellectual guy. He's a professional, I guess, so-called professional. And he'll come and say, Albert, should I just went back out last night. He said, what should I do? I said, well, now, he's been around for about 10 or 15 years at the time when he told me this. What should I do? I said, well, what you should do is take a drink, take a drug, don't go to meetings, don't help nobody, and don't pray. He said, Albert, you're telling me the wrong thing. That's not what you're supposed to be telling me. I said, what should I tell you? He said, you should tell me don't drink, don't drug, go to meetings and try to help somebody. He knew all along, don't make me a part of your shit, and I got to remember that I can't make people a part of my shit. I got to work for what I need to do, step by step, systematically, step by step by step by step by step. You know, I know I can come in here and sound honest, you know, before a captive audience, but the bottom line, I have to look at myself in the face when I go home. You know what I'm saying? Bottom line, I have to say, did I impose on anybody today? Was I vindictive? Was I malicious today? Did I do anything that I know might harm somebody today? So I'm here to tell you that, to make it short, that people who need people are the luckiest people in the world, and I need you all. Thank you.
Thank you. We'd like to thank Albert, and this time I introduce our second speaker, Leroy.
I'm an addict. My name is Leroy. and I'm surprised that there's anybody left in this room. You know, it's amazing. My home group for a lot of years was a Step in Tradition meeting, and we would do a tradition every fourth week, and there was a coffee maker and a chairperson and the leader on the fourth week, most of the weeks that we did traditions. The tradition four talks about that each group, I'll go ahead and read it for you. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. When I first got here, I would try real hard not to read the long readings. And the blue one was the best one. You know? And I hated this one because it has autonomous in it and it has anonymity. And we can all butcher that. I didn't have a clue as to what autonomy meant. When I went to the step meeting, it seemed like the only thing I ever heard in the step meeting for the first year I went there was the fourth step. They were always talking about the fourth step. And I know it wasn't on the fourth step, but that's what I needed to hear, and that's what I got. But after I was there for a while, I started hearing about the traditions, and I started hearing about what the traditions do. And as the gentleman before me shared, the steps helped me work on myself and help me change, because it is all about change. And the traditions allow me to live and work with you. If it were not for the traditions, then this fellowship would no longer be alive. It has been proven by another fellowship. A lot of what we do has been proven by another fellowship. It's been around for years. It's a $10 word that dope fiends want to manipulate. And I am amongst them. You know, I have to speak for myself. I am sure that everybody here has been in a meeting that just doesn't seem to be working the way they want it to be. And if you can get enough people in there, well, we can have a group conscience and we can make this meeting work the way I want it to be. We can get the right chairperson in here. We can get the right this. And so we manipulate to get what we want. And you know what? We're allowed to, as long as we carry the message. As long as we're not affecting Narcotics Anonymous. As long as we're not affecting anything but the way we run that meeting. And we are carrying a message of recovery, and we're working with the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. It's a difficult thing to do. The new book that we have, It Works, How and Why, is very eloquently written about the fourth tradition. It makes it sound very sweet, as how we should be so loving with each other, and how we should. It's all about building a cohesive meeting, different meetings for different people, and you know what? It's like bullshit. I need to be told what to do. You know, no, Leroy, you cannot run this meeting. This is not your meeting. And the things you're trying to pull here are bullshit. You know, so by having a sponsor, by going to meetings and hearing what other people's ideas are on this particular subject, I get the idea of what it means. You know, I did have to look it up in a dictionary. I did have to look in other fellowships' workbooks. And finally, we got some literature about this, and makes it a little bit more understanding to me. But the bottom line is what this means to me is that we have the right to self-govern. In each group, we have the right to do what we please, as long as it carries the message of recovery and it does not affect Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. We have a right to open the meeting up with chips. We have a right to have chips in the middle. We have a right not to have them at all. We have a right to read any of the readings we want whenever we want. We can have any type of style of meeting we want. And those are the things that we can do as long as we keep carrying that message. You know, the God of my understanding is my God. It's not to be brought into the meeting. I'm not supposed to be preaching in the meeting. There's a lot of different things that I go into different places and will take me aback. And I've had the pleasure of being here a while. If I continue to do what this program has taught me to do, this fellowship will last a lot longer than I will. And I have no plans on going anywhere for a while. If I don't do it, this program will die. And all it takes is a few bad apples, and you got a bad grade of apples. You know, if we do not adhere to these traditions, if we do not do what it was written down for us to do, we will destroy this fellowship. And it's not, and what it's about is it's about saving my life. It's about saving our lives. If I do the work that my sponsors suggest that I do, and my sponsors like you, I hate it. Well, what would you do, Leroy? Well, I don't want to do anything. Yeah, I don't want to do anything. Well, and he has me give my own answers, and he's been doing that for quite a few years now. And I love him dearly. I think in the time I've been working with him, I think maybe once he told me, you need to stop that. And I probably just needed to stop a few things, but that one must have been killing me. The deal is if I continue to do with the steps the way my sponsor tells me to, then I will continue to change and grow. And it's quite evident in my life because I can ask my mother, I can ask my children, I can ask my sponsees, I can ask the people I work with, that I'm not the same fool that I was the day before I got here. I'm not the same fool that I was my first year here. They say your first year is a gift. I was a fool all the way through it. You know, it must have been a gift. The traditions allow me to come in here and act like a fool. The traditions allow me to come in here and cry because somebody needs to listen to me. Somebody needs to hear what I've got to say. The traditions allow me to come in here and hear about steps that I really don't want to listen to. You know, it seemed like they had the fourth step every week for a year. And I know they didn't, but it seemed like it. You know, the traditions allow that meeting to do what it needs to do. The traditions allow meetings to be held in different places and be an NA meeting. You know, church basements. And they don't carry the message of what that church stands for. Recovery centers, and they don't stand for what that recovery stands for. You know, any two people talking about recovery can be considered a meeting if they want it to be. You know, and as long as they offer recovery to another suffering addict, they will continue to do what traditions say. When they stop doing what the traditions tell us to do, then we are in jeopardy of destroying this fellowship. And I love this fellowship. It has saved my life. And that's about all the stuff I can talk about. It's amazingly how short this tradition is, and I've been able to stretch it for at least 5 minutes. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, family. I'm Sherry, and I'm an addict. We still have plenty of time left to this meeting. So if anyone would like to come up and share, please do. Please remember to come up one at a time. Try to keep in mind there are other addicts here who are waiting to share. And if you, bless you, if you don't want to be recorded, then let Stacy know so that she can turn the recorder off while you're sharing. So the meeting is open.
My name's Tony. I'm Addie. I was listening to Albert when he was first started talking, and he was talking about not feeling. Well, let me just get on to me. Well, I got here last night. I came with my wife. She's not in recovery, so I came here by myself. You know, I got my hugs at the door, but sometimes when you're by yourself, you feel alone. But in reality, you're okay. But a lot of what I think is inside of my mind, and it's not really real. And I understand when I did my fourth step that I read the literature. And I'm real hard on myself. And after doing the fifth step and looking back, because when I did it the first time, it gave me an ability. Once I did it again, I got more as I go over it with guys I sponsor, and as I look at it and I go to step meetings, I get more insight into the step. And I really understand what they say when the literature says that it helps us sort through the confusion and contradiction in our lives. Because a lot of stuff that happened in my life before I even picked up anything was a result of how I perceived it. And I'm going to give you an example. It's like doing the looking at what I wrote in my fourth step with my sponsor in the fifth step, I found out that I was real angry with my father, who died when I was 9 years old. And see, I'm standing here saying that he died, but until I was 39 years old, with about 18 months clean, I was telling my sponsor I was angry because he left me. And my sponsor told me he didn't leave you, he died. And see, and that was part of the way I looked at a situation. And him helping me clear up the way I see things. And I'm talking about, what we're talking? We're talking 30 years here. I'm angry with a man that died because he had a heart attack. I'm angry with him because we didn't go to the baseball game. He didn't take me fishing. And he didn't do a lot of things. And then I'm sitting here, I'm standing here, Shan, and I'm realizing that I shared that stuff with my mother. And I hadn't had a drug. Hadn't done anything yet. I shared that with my mother because what she did was she paid the man next door to me to take me fishing. One of those things I was angry at my father for not doing to me, doing with me. The steps helped me a whole lot. I mean, it was really that first journey inside of me. I had never really went inside of me before. Albert was saying something about loving drugs, and it wasn't. And I'm sitting there and saying it wasn't so much that I loved, like he said, it wasn't so much that I loved the drugs. It was that I didn't understand, and I disliked myself so much that I was willing to do anything to get away from me. I was willing to do anything you wanted to do to get away from me. I was willing to do stuff to make you feel good so that you could tell me I was all right, so that I could feel a little better about me. But as I continue in the recovery process, I'm feeling better about myself. Sometimes it's a little bit of work. Sometimes it's a little bit of prayer. Sometimes it's just coming to a meeting and listening to somebody else share and realizing that what's going on with me ain't so bad. Maybe I need to go home and say I'm sorry. Maybe I need to go home and say I'm wrong. Because my wife still uses alcohol. And most of the times it's on the weekend. And it's something, I've been clean 7 years, so it's something she's been doing since before I was clean. My mind is always perceiving it to be like a problem, and I'm thinking, and at this time I was real angry, and I'm saying maybe it's about time to do something to try to force a change in the situation. Maybe it's not time. Maybe it's time not to be married anymore, and I need to find somebody who's clean like me. And I go to a meeting, and the guy talking about him and his wife just broke up, and he just left. And he don't know if he's going to make it back with her, right? You know, he just left. He packed a few bags or whatever, right? And he realizing how important she was in his life. And then I start taking a look at me and how I'm trying to control her and make her do something. And I'm so fearful that it's going to be a problem, but everything is working fine. And then remembering that she put up with me for 20 years while I was using and not paying bills and not coming home and running around with every woman and with the guys and everything else and not coming home for 3 and 4 days. So it's like, okay, can I practice the stuff that I learned in recovery? And I do believe that it's a learning process for me, I know that. So can I go home and practice some patience? Can I just believe that it's going to be okay? Because I know I come in here, it's got one guy sponsor, and for the last 6 years he's been relapsing. And I can stop and go see him and tell him I believe that you can make it. But here I'm having this thing at home and I'm getting real angry. Right? So and I'm finding that out too. It's like, yeah, it's easy to do it outside of the house than it is to do it in the house. And I would always hear people say, okay, practice it here and then take it home. And that's the way it works for me, because it's real hard for me to practice at home and then try to bring it in here. I'd work it here. I watch somebody else work it, and then I try to take it home. I don't know what you call it, but I'm here because I heard somebody share one time that in working on the relationship, you know, is the selflessness of the program, and you sharing yourself with somebody else is not so much about all that I want to do, it's sometimes what she want to do. And she's a woman that likes shopping. And I know it's not a lot of women that like shopping, but she one that likes shopping. And so I heard somebody say one of those biggest challenges in a relationship is to go shopping with your wife or your girlfriend. You pay for it and follow her around while she goes shopping. And that's a part of why I'm here this weekend. Because tomorrow we going shopping. I'm not coming here tomorrow. I'm checking out at 11 o'clock when they say check out. We going up to Rehoboth. We going shopping. I'm going to put the money in her hand, and I'm going to follow her around while she shops. Now, hopefully somebody somewhere going to hear me share the results of this, because we'll share. We'll talk about, you know, this is where I am, right? But, you know, I like to hear the other side a lot of times, because I need, this is what we say, this is the, what is your problem and how can we help? If this is my problem and you already went through it, then that's how you can help me. Share how you went through it. Don't pump no air into it and tell me you was this wonderful person going through it. Tell me how it was a struggle. Because if you went through it and there wasn't no struggle, and I'm wondering, I start thinking I'm different. Why am I struggling? All right, but so I come in here, I'm learning how to live, I'm getting better with me, I'm getting better with those around me, and sometimes I'm getting better with people I don't even know. And like I say, the program is a blessing. I keep coming back.
My name is Sandra, and I'm an addict. And my sponsee just told me that I really needed to share about how I'm feeling right now. I'm so glad that this program allowed me to look at me enough to be able to say that I hold on to being wounded, but it also allows me to know that wounded hearts do heal. And I'm saying this because in 1990, I brought my daughter to this convention, and I allowed her to go with the people that had the activities for children, and I stayed here. And before this whole thing was over, I was being paged over the loudspeaker, and I went back to the hotel and the room that my child was at, and they had her in another room, not allowing her to interact with the other children, and was spastic. And I got my child out of there, and I said that I would not do that again. Today I allowed my daughter to go to the zoo with the kids, and in doing that, it took a lot for me to do that, but wounded hearts heal. I have to admit, and I'm so glad that I understood that, one, I'm prejudiced. Today, little white girl, I turned my child over into her care. 11 years ago, it was some white girls that were keeping her in that room. I saw the terror in her face at that time. So wounded hearts heal. I'm prejudiced. Two, I don't trust my child with a lot of people. I believe that God gave me that child to protect. And I spoke to someone downstairs and I said, I'm going to try not to be in my head about my baby going to the zoo with people. And he spoke to me like, well, what the fuck is you worried about? You know? Yay. And it was like, I've never let her do this before. And as I said, I carry resentment. It's taken me 11 years to allow her to go on a trip with everybody else. My girlfriend over there is one of the few people that I allow to take care of my child. I don't leave her with anybody. And had I not been in this program, had I not taken my own inventory, I hear a lot of people that want to run away from learning who they are. But you see, what happens is I get better. The admission of who I am allows me to move outside of where I am. I'm still a little scared. I'm looking at my cell phone every few minutes. I was listening at Albert talk about saying that you're fine. Well, thank God I've been here long enough. See, they told me a long time ago, talking would save my life. Don't tell people that I'm doing fine. If you make the mistake of asking me how I'm doing, I'm going to tell you. If you don't want to listen, you'll walk on off, and I don't think that it's, you know, I'm past. It used to be that I thought that it was just that you didn't like me or you didn't want to be bothered with me. But today, okay, it might be a little bit too heavy for you. If some people don't know what I'm talking about my, she's taught me a lot of stuff. I had to work on getting better because parenting her was a priority for me. If recovery didn't allow me to do that, it was no need for me to be here. So, hopefully I'm talked about taking my own inventory with that. You see the tears coming out of my eyes because I'm scared shitless right now. But I know I'm in the right place, and I know that through fear, I gain courage. That maybe next year, I mean, I've been able to while I was here. Last year, she was in and out of everything. She went to all of the stuff. I hadn't even given her money sometimes. You know, she conned people into letting her go to the kitty cabaret. And if y'all seen her riding up and down everything with the skateboard, she's been out looking at the water. She said she wasn't going to nothing but an Eden meeting, so they haven't had any in here. So, yeah, she haven't been to no meeting since she's been here, but she's been enjoying herself, and so have I. I know that I can shut down. I shut down when I believe that other people don't understand me. That's a part of my disease, and me living in isolation and aloneness is one of the things that had me at the end wanting to take that child's life and then take my own. And recovery affords me to, in spite of the things that life has brought me, and they are not bills that I have to pay, in spite of the things that life brought me, even those things that give me pain give me joy. In spite of the things that life brought me, that I'm relatively happy, and I have a child that is most certainly happy. She would have probably rather have been in Europe, because that's where we just came from, than to be here. But she's fallen right on into that, and I'm doing the same thing. So I'm going to keep coming back, and thank you.
Thank you. Hi, family. My name is Rosetta, and I am blessed. Like she said, everything is in divine order, and I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to finish my third step today with my sponsor, and she suggested that I attend all step meetings, and I'm following directions today, and that's why I'm here. And Albert, you was right on time. It's about me in the sense of when it comes to taking my inventory. I know I have a lot of stuff I have to work on. I am not there, you know. I went to the marathon meeting last night over at Castles in the Sand, and it was a guy there that was so comfortable with doing his inventory, and he done it. And I was like, he was, you know, where the stomach was flipping, and I'm like, he's talking about me because I'm not, I wasn't, no, I'm not there. Can I get that honest? Can I stand up and tell people my denials? You know, can I do those things? Because I was like, oh, fourth step is going to be okay, blah, 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 blah. And when I heard him share, I was like, oh, he is talking about me. You know, and so I know that when I, as I was reading the end of the third step, they was talking about now it's time to take some risk. And, but the risk is once, I want to stay in this program. That's my desire, to stay here. And the risk that I have to take is that I know that I have to be honest. And I'm not all the time honest, you know. But I know it's going to be all right because I have good orderly direction today, you know. And I listen to you people and I take the suggestions that you all give me. And I don't want to sometimes. Now, so it's like this four-step thing is, I'm not going to be scared of it because it's going, I know, I take it, it's going to free me. Yeah, it's going to free me because I'm tired of, don't even know I'm lying. False evidence is appearing real. See, I still got those things that I'm working on too. And that I know that I need to get gut. And that's where my fifth step. So I'm going to go to the fifth step meeting. You know, I'm going to just keep it simple. Keep things simple. And because it's like, it's coming. This is the time, the foundation I have. I'm pretty comfortable with it, but I always keep those up front. First step for me is acceptance. The second step is belief. And the third step is change. And that's where I'm at. And I have to change. And I know I have to be honest. I have got to get there. And I'm going to get there. You know, I have total faith that I'm going to do this. You know, I don't want to. You know, but I'm going to do it. But anyway, I just had to bring that out because the way this guy shared, it was like, I got to say something, you know, and I want to thank everybody for being here because it's like, without you and the God of my understanding first, I wouldn't even be standing here talking, you know, in front of a convention, you know, whatever. But I want to thank everybody because I know with you all's help, I'm going to be as honest as I can get, totally, not be in denial, and do what I'm supposed to do for me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Yeah. We still have a few more minutes. Somebody, go ahead. One, two. We still have 5 minutes left. Okay.
I'm Jeff. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jeff.
I want to just fill this, end this thing up for everybody. Al was one of my mentors in the program. Sandra's my sponsor. And I did a fourth step, so I can say something. I wasn't going to do one ever. You know, I'm one of those people that thought the steps was just something that filled up the spaces on the board in the meeting. And you know, two is a step that they say in the literature that we pass over with a minimum of concern. I really try to pass over all of them with a minimum of concern. I really thought that staying clean would be enough. Why bother rehashing that old crap that, you know, can't we just let bygones be bygones? And why do we even have to go here? You know, I really don't want to dredge up yesterday because it stunk. It's painful. It's horrible. But if you're going to live the program, then damn it, you got to work the steps and do something with it. When I finally did four, I had 5 years clean. It was around the latter part of 94. And I remember doing it. It was very light. I had went to therapy because one of the people that I was involved with, because I reached a lot of bottoms in the program, and it was usually through in and out with girls and different relationship kind of stuff, and just not using and crazy shit, you know. And the girl said, why don't you try therapy? And I went in on an experimental basis. I had a young white girl who was doing her internship, and I was her project. What really amazed her was just my ability to just talk about myself. We weren't measuring levels of honesty, but I could just look in her eyes and just see she was like, "Damn, this ain't what I asked for." You know what I mean? What I got in touch with through the process of talking to her was that I'd already been prepared, and I was really being prepared to take a step and do four. We were able to find out the patterns before I even sat down and started writing a few months later, and really focus on a couple of things that really was disturbing in my past. One was, I thought it was the deviant sexual behaviors that I was involved with prior to even turning 10. But that wasn't even a biggie. That was a biggie in my head. The big one was me not interacting with my daughter, who at the time was about, our daughter's the same age, so she was about 12 or 13. And the relationship that I didn't have with my father. Those were the most painful issues and the things that really were bugging me at that moment. The stuff that I was doing in recovery was the stuff I was doing in recovery. I wasn't using, so I thought I was okay. But we got to the basis of what we need to take care of right now. And when I sat down and did the fourth step and started writing it out, even though my sponsor said when we did five, it was kind of superficial, and maybe I want to take a look at three again. I'm from, you know, the old school where you just wrote the fourth step. And people knew that you didn't do it if you sat in a step meeting, and they would know. They would be like, well, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? When are you going to be a part of this program? So I felt I did it. And now I can go in a meeting and they will leave me alone and start bugging me about when I was going to do it. When I sat with her and we went over it, took about 2 hours, and I cringed at that part when we got, and I know she probably don't remember this, but I cringed at that part when we were talking about the sexual stuff that happened when I was 8 years old. And she said, "What'd you say?" And I sort of read it out loud. And then we also came to the same determination, if I remember, at the end of the conversation, not only about that, but that I needed to probably be a little more willing to attempt to be a father with my child. God took care of that later, because she definitely sent her my way. And the day our relationship is off the hook, you know, my daughter is 20 years old. She's saved. She's not pregnant. She don't do drugs. She's ready to go to school at Mercer College in Macon, Georgia. I'm stunned. God take care of everything. You know what I mean? Your kid's going to be fine. God going to take care of everything. I'm stunned. I don't take no credit for nothing that's happening with her or anybody else. And then the last thing was with my father, who suffered 2 strokes. We had no relationship for probably 30 years. I don't think I ever lived any more than 5 miles away from him. And I was so resentful of him not being my father. And the reality was I wasn't being his son. So, you know, it really wasn't a victim kind of deal. It was just, that's how it was. The program opened my heart, and seeing the stuff on paper made it a little easier to step in there and be of service to him, particularly in the last 2 years where he's had to overcome 2 strokes. He's 81 years old. In fact, he just turned 81 on Easter Sunday. And all I do is when he calls, I just show up. You know, I've never sat down with him and said, "I'm mad at you about this," or "I'm mad at you about that," because at this point in time, it ain't necessary. You know, y'all said it all starts and ends with me, and it ain't really about my father. It's about the role I played in the situation, and that's kind of how it worked out. So anybody who hasn't done 4, take a risk. It ain't that bad. You know what I mean? Give yourself a shot. And let us know how it worked out. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Sharon. I'm Sharon. I'm an addict.